everyone, and welcome back to the Untitled Gadget Podcast. We are now in episode 19, and this week has turned out to be very busy, even though we didn't get many launches as such, but we got a lot of details about exciting products and WWDC, so we're going to be talking about everything Apple announced and also go into detail on OnePlus Nord now that we know more about it, and talk about general stuff that we've liked using or other products in general. So let's kick things off. As always, I'm joined by Dhruv and Akshay. So guys, how's it going?
Hectic as fuck, dude.
Yeah, it's been a busy week.
Yeah, I think for all of us, like you said, you know, despite not having many launches going on, it's just been a busy week. And
although I've been distracting myself by playing Pokemon X on my 3DS, so I've been having fun on that. And then, yeah, I mean, a bunch of reviews have gone up. Started watching 2.5 Men again because fucking shows these days are terrible. And yeah, that's about it.
Hey, do you have like all the game consoles, Bala? Like, do you have anything? Do you not have anything, or is it just like a stack?
I don't have the PS Vita. That's something that I always wanted, but could never find it at a decent price. I think I skipped the entire 3DS, the first few 3DS, 3DSi, all of that, because I was in college and I thought these are games for kids. And little did you know, when I'm crossing 30, I'm like, fuck, these games are awesome, and why the hell did I miss them out? So I'm playing them now, catching all the games that I missed out in college. More or less, I've owned all of the consoles. I don't have them with me. Like, I don't have the 360. I sold that off. I had the GameCube as a kid. Didn't treat it with respect, and it's probably gathering dust somewhere. I bought the Game Boy Advance in 2002. Played it on the flight way back from the US, and never saw it again after that. So, at some point, I've owned almost, not all, but almost every major console.
Interesting. And Dhruv, you also have like a lot of consoles, right?
Yeah, I mean, so Bhala and I are actually quite similar on that page, except that I do have a Vita, but I don't have a 3DS. But I've got every single PlayStation model ever made, including all the variants of the PS2. And I've got every single Game Boy ever made. I mean, I've got all the Nintendo handhelds except the 3DS. I've also got all the variants of the Game Boy SP, because that was my favorite console ever. I mean, it's still, I think, you know, maybe it's a bit of nostalgia, but the game library on that was insane. All the different SPs that they made, all the original variant, the Micro, I've got the Super Mario 30th Anniversary Edition Game Boy Micro, I've got a sealed pack DMG 101. Which is the original Game Boy, and that's just a stunning piece of kit. So, yeah.
Quick question: do you still have the small PS1 that came out afterwards?
Remember
the small PS1 that? Oh,
yeah,
that was a
console. It is beautiful. Like, it's amazing.
I bought that as well. I was like, fuck, how the hell did they manage to shrink that massive dude to this small dude?
Yep. Though I mean, I think a bunch
they
of
put
these,
it in the dryer.
It sure looks like it, man, as if they put it in a dryer and never took it out for like 5 years, and they're like, fuck, here you go, there's a small one.
That's it. Like, I never got on the Microsoft train, so I've never owned any Xbox, and I'll be honest, it's just that be it the console design, which is a factor for me, the games just don't appeal to me. I've played Xbox, Halo, which was a fun game, but I wouldn't buy a console just for one game. And so
you've played the most important game on that console, so you're sorted.
That's true. But yeah, I mean, you know, other than that, like you said, it's just been a hectic week. Heard some new albums, some good recommendations there if anybody's up for it.
Yes, please. We will make sure we get to that at the end so that, well, we have something to talk about there after we finish all the boring product stuff. Okay, let's dive straight in. So this week we got a lot of details on the OnePlus Nord. OnePlus set up this really wacky Instagram account called OnePlus Z Lite thing, and they made it request only, and they got flooded with quests, and yeah, so they're trying to do something different with this device. They're doing this whole guerrilla marketing and started teasing out details. We know that the phone will be available in this new teal color option. That looks interesting. And we also know that the phone itself will be called the Nord. I don't understand the naming convention there, but because Nord doesn't really gel with OnePlus at all. So let's see how that goes. And I got details on the camera, and yeah, so this thing is going to have a 32 megapixel and 8 megapixel dual cameras at the front with a wide angle sensor for the 8 megapixel. So yeah, gonna be a lot of exciting stuff to look forward to. But Dhruv, what are you looking forward to from this Nord the most?
So, you know, like I said, I mean, the dual camera sensor, camera sensors on the front is nice. I like myself a good wide angle selfie camera. I'm excited about that. Don't care much about the 32 megapixel sensor. Sure, it's going to be okay. I'd like them to hit the original OnePlus One price, you know, somewhere around the 20K price range.
Yeah.
The 765 is not a problem. That's more than enough for most people. Of course, it's going to bring up those standard debates that, you know, for 24, you can get an 855 with one of those Realme phones and all of that. It's just that Oxygen OS provides a nice, solid experience. Sure, there's a few bugs, but for the most part, it's sorted. OnePlus has committed and delivered on long-term updates, so that's great. And it's just going to be a solid package that I don't think I would have any issues recommending, going by my past experience with OnePlus phones. And this can become the de facto standard for the 20 to 23 thousand rupees price range. It has the potential for that, at least.
Yeah, I was actually looking at a phone for my father-in-law, and I was looking at that 30,000 price point, and there really isn't nothing. Sure, Realme makes that X2 Pro, and that has the 855, and it's a solid value. But not too sure with Realme UI, even though they've made a lot of considerable fixes there over the year, I still feel that it lacks that overall polish. So yeah, if this thing comes in at around 20-25, it's going to be that standout value in that category, just because of the fact that it's running Oxygen OS. But Akshay, you don't really care about the device that much, huh?
Not really, not at all. I mean, I personally don't care for it. Yes, I am excited for the people who've been wanting an affordable OnePlus. And if Oxygen OS runs just the way it does on their high-end devices, I think that's a superb deal. Although I'm really not too impressed by the, you know, pill-shaped selfie camera module, because I didn't like it on the S10 Plus, and I'm pretty sure I'm not going to like it here. It's just too obtrusive. I mean, it looks like Wally's eyes are always staring at me. I just don't like that. To be honest I really loved the pop-up camera system, even though that could be finicky and it can't be cost effective for this particular phone. But the selfie camera is something that I don't like on the Huawei P40 series either.
Yeah,
so it's just my personal preference, I guess. Apart from that, I mean, the marketing strategy is nothing new. I've seen it before, not with a tech company, but definitely seen it with other forms of brands that deal with other forms of products. So yeah, I mean, it's a great start for them. OnePlus Nord, maybe they're going for that minimalistic kind of vibe, you know, what Nord designs are known for in the modern era. But then again, I really need to look at the phone to see if that actually represents you know, that ideology. So
yeah,
I mean, I'm excited for the people, to be honest, not for myself. And it's coming at a perfect time, actually, when people are looking not to spend too much money during the coronavirus outbreak. I think if they hit that 25,000 rupees mark, I think they're sorted.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this time, the timing was just right. And yeah, they're going with this new beginnings moniker for the phone, and they're actually going to release a trailer. They released a trailer for a documentary that's coming up on the 30th.
I am so interested in that. I love documentaries, because that's what I keep watching most of the time.
Yeah.
And the way that has been shot, the music in the background, the soundtrack, it looks like, you know, a proper documentary. from the good old days to today. And I want to see their journey, man. I want to see how it has been from their perspective as well, because, you know, we get to see the phone and like, oh, it's a spectacular phone, but we don't get to see how their fans love their phone. Yeah, we've been to events and seen it, but in a documentary form, you get to hear people talk about their devices, how much they love the brand. I want to see that. I really want to see that.
Yeah, and I want to see it being dictated by David Attenborough.
Imagine,
here's a phone in its natural habitat.
Let me tell you one thing. If he got into tech reviews, especially on YouTube, every YouTuber is going to lose his job in the next 1 year. That's for sure. He's so damn good.
That voice.
Yeah, man.
Voice, that delivery. Come on. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
He's just incredible.
Yeah. Although I wouldn't mind getting James May to review tech.
Oh yeah. That would be hilarious. I mean, James May or any of the three guys. I mean,
yeah,
if they got into tech as well. Oh man, that would be so.
Did
much
you
fun.
See
they
the one where he unboxes
everything.
The Yaris, car unboxing thing?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Oh yeah, that's so hilarious. He's basically emulating this YouTube unboxing nonsense, but with a car.
So I have zero knowledge about cars. You know, so whenever I watched Top Gear, it was just for those three guys, and I maybe learned something about cars. But then again, when they left, I lost interest. I saw the Grand Tour, but it's their antics that I love. I don't give
a
damn what cars
they're
in.
No, you should see it again. The new Top Gear is fantastic. It's amazing. There's Freddie Flintoff, and Chris Harris is back again, and there's another guy, Paddy McGuinness.
What happened to Matt LeBlanc? Because I saw him.
He left. He was good, but he wasn't great.
He was good.
Yeah, this new chemistry is insane. They're back to doing all those old antics and stuff. It's pretty crazy.
I'll take your word for it. I'll watch it this weekend.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, back to the phone again. So it is interesting that they're offering something that's very similar to the OnePlus 8 for like a significantly lower price. So we'll have to see where that fits in. But right now, it looks like a very interesting phone in that 20 to 25,000 segment. So, we'll have a lot more to talk about the OnePlus Nord. It's meant to go live in India on July 10th, so just over 2 weeks to go, just under 2 weeks to go, actually. So, we'll have much more to say about it in the coming weeks. But then, let's segue into another product category that the brand is releasing, and that's the TV. The new OnePlus TV is releasing on July 2nd. We know a little about the design because, well, I managed to talk to Pete and then got some details on the design. They're going to retain that similar premium sort of design aesthetic, but roll it out at a lower price point. So what do you guys think about the positioning of that budget TV?
I mean, it's probably a good idea considering, I mean, how much of a mark or it didn't make with the first generation. I mean, if they can...
At all.
Yeah. I mean, not that it was a bad TV, it wasn't. It's just that they over-engineered it a bit, in my opinion. You know, that entire floating speaker array. I think the price markup for that was a bit too much. The TV without that entire moving speaker system was definitely better priced. And it wasn't a bad panel at all. Regardless, I mean, if they can get some of the design aesthetics of that and, you know, nail the Android TV experience, sure, I think they should be able to do well. Though, again, you know, it's a tough market. Like, Xiaomi's kind of established themselves as the de facto option. And there are...
For budget TVs.
Yeah, for budget TVs. And there are other alternatives as well. So, you know...
Realme.
I know. Yeah, Realme. So, how exactly do they plan to differentiate themselves? I don't know. That remains to be seen.
I mean, let's not forget when OnePlus launched their super over-engineered TV, the very next day, Samsung spoiled their party, dropped the prices for one of their most spectacular TVs, the Frame. It was cheaper than the OnePlus TV, and basically people went for that because it just was an incredible offer. We can't ignore Samsung as well because they are really, really reputable players in the TV segment. And when OnePlus is trying to sell a TV which is in their which is where they dominate, the premium side, you can't really compete with them.
Actually,
that way.
You
I
make
mean,
a very interesting point there, Akshay. Like that Samsung's being particularly aggressive with their TVs now.
Yeah, yeah.
The Frame is 70-75K. The
exactly.
Even the Serif series is what 80-85,000, which is bloody brilliant. I mean, all said and done, the Frame is a better TV than any of these options. It's got a 120 hertz
panel. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a 79?
75. Yeah.
What the fuck?
They're doing, they have some incredible deals, and if you go to Tata Chrome, you may even get it cheaper, man. At retail outlets, is even cheaper.
Okay, okay. Sorry, go on, Dhruv. I want to know more about the TV.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's got a QLED panel like OnePlus, except better. And it's got a 120 hertz refresh rate. It's got all the trimmings, like all the latest standards and everything. It's got a great operating system. Sure, it's not Android TV, but Samsung's Tizen-based OS is actually really, really good. And
really
it has stuff like Apple TV built into it. Heck, it even has the iTunes Store built into it. Something like that.
Yeah.
It even does AirPlay.
What?
Which,
yeah, it does AirPlay as
yes.
well.
So,
it does everything that you would expect from a smart TV, to be honest. It has everything. Apart from maybe Chromecast built-in, there's everything
I
else.
I think it has some play on that as well.
They have Samsung's Smart Things app that you can use.
Yeah,
to,
so you can use that. I think you can use at least one of the variants of that. Lets you use it like a smart home hub as well. Also, it's stunning. Like if you're able to enable that zero frame design in your home decor, because it ships with a separate box. So it's a single cable. Not everybody has the ability to, you know, route it through the wall, but if you can do that, that's like hands down one of the most stunning televisions that you can buy right now. So yeah, for like 70-75 thousand, I'd just buy a Frame over anything else on the market.
Isn't OnePlus using Samsung panels as well for the QLED TV?
That's what I was going to talk about, because Samsung owns that QLED market, but these guys are using their own derivative. It's not Samsung.
Where, I mean, do we have any idea where it's coming from?
It is by a Chinese manufacturer. I actually know somebody who works in QLED manufacturing. So I know a cousin that designs these QLED panels. So I was asking him about it when it came out. There was a lot of excitement around it. It's not Samsung.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think, you know, Indian market is habitual of their, you know, the way they spend their money.
Mm-hmm.
And companies like Sony, Samsung, LG have been here for decades,
mm-hmm.
right? And OnePlus getting into the market with a premium price that actually can be more expensive than these brands, people often switch or stick to the brand they know and not go with something which is brand new. It's the first time they're launching the devices. I think this is the second time they're doing it. And I, on the other hand, I'm not sure how these TVs are going to be priced. If it's competitive, it's a great option. But if it's going to be something as expensive as, let's say, the Frame right now, like $75,000, $70,000, yeah, it's hard. It's hard for them to capture that market.
I mean, I'll take that a step further. If it's even within a 10,000 rupee margin of that, I would just prefer to buy a Samsung or a Sony or an LG. There's multiple factors to it. One, a television is a long-term purchase. You're not replacing it for at least like 4 to 5 years. So
yeah,
these
exactly.
brands have built up, a certain legacy that of quality, guarantee of quality. Also, they specialize in making televisions. You know, it's not. They deliver, and the picture quality is what you get from a Xiaomi TV versus an equivalent Samsung TV. The Samsung is 9 out of 10 times better, because this is like literally what they're doing with that entire division. That's exactly what it's doing. So
yeah.
I don't know. I prefer to stick to a brand which has been doing something for the last whatever number of years, and it's less of a value argument for me, at least for televisions, because I just get something that delivers the best picture quality.
Not to mention, when we got the first TV, it was buggy as hell.
That's also
right?
true.
And mm-hmm. and Samsung's TV, no matter which one you get, works out of the box.
Exactly.
That plays a major role in my purchasing decision as well, because if your TV doesn't work out of the box, just with the Mi TV box, we had the same issues.
Yeah.
It just turns me off. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
I don't want my TV to get a support 1 month later when I want to just watch TV. You know?
I think what went on there was that we got the units before they went on the market, and they was still fine-tuning things. I was talking to them about it. And by the time these were actually available to customers, they rolled out that OTA update and it fixed things. And after that, it has been lag-free. So,
but, you know, Arish,
you know, reviews were not that great, right? Reviews were not that great. And people were like, okay, I don't want to touch this thing because right now we don't know the software's work. It really matters that your product works even before it is available to the public. Because let's say if I had a bad experience, I write about it. They'll be like, okay, fuck it. I don't know if it's going to work or not.
Yeah.
Exactly what I was
saying. It plays a major role.
That's the thing, right? Like, I mean, the product is reviewed as is sent to us. And there's a hard embargo on it. It's not my problem that, you know, I'm being shipped a buggy unit. That's the onus lies on the manufacturer. And that stands true for every brand out there. But yeah, I mean, on that same note, I was about to make a quick point that, you know, given the long tail cycles of televisions, I mean, some things just aren't... I mean, everybody's putting a bigger focus on Android TV, blah, 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 a thousand different things. It's not the biggest decider for me because no matter what they're building it now, it's going to be outdated in two, three, 2 years. Maximum 4 years. You know, I would just rather buy an external box which does one job. In my case, the Nvidia Shield. I've had it since 2016, I guess. And it's still getting updates. It's still the best experience of Android TV that you can get. And that's the thing, right? Like, I mean, Sony's Android TVs, they're extremely underpowered. I mean, it's just such a terrible experience. But I don't care. Like, if I had to buy an OLED TV, I would probably seriously consider a Sony because that panel is what matters. I can just get a... I mean, if I had a small budget, I'd get a Fire Stick 4K. Or if I had the money to spend, I'd get a Shield and just get done with it.
That's what I do with my Samsung TV. Like, there are certain apps that are not available, so I have Apple TV and Shield hooked up to it. That's exactly what I do. I barely used the onboard app until I got these two devices. I used that before. It was still working fine. But I prefer the box experience. And regardless of if you buy a smart TV or not, it doesn't really matter because now these things have become super affordable, right?
Yeah.
Fire Stick TV, Mi TV Box. I'm pretty sure others will join in as well. Airtel Extreme. I don't know what else is there.
Yeah.
So
nobody should use
lot
that
of options.
Airtel Extreme thing.
Yeah. Whatever it is. I've never used it. I'm just giving an example. But I think it's just that when you are coming out with a TV, it should work out of the box. It doesn't matter how many features it has. The panel needs to be competitive and priced well. And yeah, you're taking on the big players, Samsung, Sony, LG, and you better be ready for them because, you know, they're no small players to be messed around with.
Yeah, but I think they're doing the smart thing by focusing on the affordable segment now because the premium market is all about folks wanting to go to stores and seeing the panel quality before buying it because they cost a lakh or so. But I think they have with their brand cachet and all the goodwill they've built up, I think they will see better momentum by focusing on the budget segment.
Hopefully.
If they're able to differentiate it by that design and say, oh, look, we're giving you that bezel-less premium design, but it costs like 20,000-30,000.
I think this budget TV will either make it or break it for them.
In the TV segment, yeah.
Yeah, in the TV segment, yeah.
Yeah.
Not in the phone. Phones are there. They're doing an incredible job. In the TV segment, I think this needs to be priced well. That's all it comes down to.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. I think we've talked about OnePlus stuff enough. So let's switch to the other big news of the week. And that is Apple announcing a whole lot of stuff at WWDC. We got iOS 14. We got the new iPadOS. We got shifting to ARM formats. So let's start off with iOS 14. Akshay, what are your key takeaways?
The key takeaways is that iOS is getting too similar to Android. I've been a long life iOS user, and I love the changes that are coming, but as a reviewer who has already seen it on other phones for years, it's nothing new. Given that it's nothing new, it's still a great way to implement an update because it changes how you use the iPhone altogether. Like, you know, like, you no longer get your screen blocked whenever you get a call. You have a small notification instead. You have PIP. You have nifty new accessibility features like tapping on the back and you can do certain actions. You have widgets now, and it's not entirely the same way as Android, but I prefer Android's widget system. This just makes it easier for me to see my own information on my home screen. But my biggest complaint was the fact that there are too many apps on the damn home screen. The same issue that I had with the Mi 10, and they now have an app library or app drawer, as Android fans know it as, and that's my most important feature for the phone, the app library bit.
I don't know what stood out for you, Dhruv.
I like the Androidification of iOS.
That's exactly what I said. Yeah.
I don't give a shit what platform you're on. It's great that, you know, every platform is getting features from each other. And it's just good for the ecosystem. It's good for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't give a shit about fanboy wars. I don't really do so in anything.
Don't say that. I'll bring a PlayStation right now, and then we're gonna have fanboys. Let's not talk about
that. Honestly, I mean, it's a great move. I like the fact that they're bringing widgets over. I love widgets. I use them a lot on Android as well, so that's a great move. I think it's just going to spur Android devs to put in more focus on their widgets. So that's good.
Yeah.
The app drawer looks nice. I like a lot of the privacy features. I love how much of a focus there is, to the point that the privacy focus is seriously making me consider getting an iPhone. And I never thought that would be the case, that would ever happen. Good moves with iPad OS. Are they calling it iPad OS now?
Yeah. They called it last year, man.
Yeah. That was a dense presentation. Anyways, iPad OS. So I like that, you know, in Spotlight they're bringing Mac OS like features, and on the other hand, on Mac OS they're bringing iPad features. So
iPad like features.
Overall, though, like, I think this year is going to stand out as one of the most important WWDCs for Apple. Leaving aside the transition away from Intel, it's really representative of the. In the most simplest of words, the sorted vision that Apple has for their ecosystem. You know, it's all heading in one direction. Everybody's talking to each other, unlike Google. And they're enabling a product ecosystem that is beneficial to their customers. That doesn't mean that it's going to play well with everything else on the market. It probably won't. But Apple doesn't really care, you know. They have a lock-in with their buyers, and they're just gunning for that. You know, if on the PC side, on the computing side, if they have an 8% market share or so, they're like, for that 8%, we're going to build the best experience so that those people never move away. Leave aside the remaining 92%. They'll come on board if they have to, and it's working for them. I mean, they're one of the richest companies in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I feel that after watching WWDC, this is a different Apple. Earlier, it was a very different experience, to be honest. This is a small anecdote, though. And it feels like Apple now is actually listening to their users and their fans. That's something I never thought I would say in the same sentence. But I feel that after this WWDC, that they're actually listening to what their users want, and they're actually delivering. And that's
more than that, they're actually listening to their developers now for the first time. So that is
a big
shift from previous years, because
previously
it was all a walled garden and nothing got through without their say-so. And now I think they're relenting in a few areas where they're like, okay, if it's for the greater good, we'll let this pass through. Like we've seen with that Hey email service being allowed to come back onto the app store, so stuff like that. For iOS, I've been using it for the better part of a week on my iPhone SE, and I really like it. The widgets are static, but I feel that they're more cohesive. I think this implementation is actually done right. So excited to see what third-party apps get to use on this on that whole widget section. It's actually still weird. There's this disconnect that widgets are on iOS. So that's the case. And
it was hard for me to get you.
Yeah, it's just weird.
And on the iPad as well. I never thought I would have widgets on the iPad. PIP is there, yes, from before, but I was using the iPad earlier today. Actually, not today. Yesterday, I just woke up. So I was like, this feels good. I don't have to, like, you know, keep swiping for little information I need. I don't need to close an app. I don't need to do that. The new Magic Keyboard works like as if I'm using a laptop. I mean, it's all coming together.
Yeah.
I really like that. And I feel Apple fans are going to appreciate that.
Yeah, but the thing I like the most in that is that I can just disable all these other home screens. I always just like to use two home screens where I have the things that I need the most.
Yeah.
And then
exactly.
The fact that I can just disable these and then use that app library to find other apps that I use, that is just like such a big convenience draw. And I don't like the way that drawer is laid out now with the auto categorization. That's just not something I enjoy. But let's see where they take it from here.
I mean, when Craig said that, you know, you only remember the first two home screens on the iPhone and you have no idea what's there. That's the problem that I face.
Yeah.
I have muscle memory for most of my apps, but that's only for the first two screens. After that, I just have to fucking search the app and then launch it.
Yeah.
And the app library, that which is why I thought it was the most important update to me, because I can just easily look for apps that I need. And there are quite a few of them. And I think that's a welcome change for sure.
So how are you liking it on the iPad? I should really get one of those things to test out. And you have the iPad Pro 2020, right?
Yes, I got it a few 2 weeks ago. And man, I mean, it's... Yeah, I mean, it looks, from the front, it looks the same as a 2018 iPad Pro, but there's so much going on under the hood that it is by far my favorite device I'm using these days,
right,
both for productivity and gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And iPad OS has transformed. I mean, it feels like as if I am using a MacBook Pro. The trackpad on the new Magic Keyboard feels like a proper trackpad. The cursor on the screen may not look like a mouse, but it functions like a mouse for sure, you know. And basically, if you don't need a powerful laptop and you just need to do emails, some documentation work, a little bit of graphic design, I think the iPad Pro is a perfect replacement for a laptop. I mean, for our kind of work, we need a little bit more powerful laptops for graphic design or whatnot. But the iPad Pro can handle it easily as well. You know, there's Photoshop and Affinity on it. You use the Apple Pencil and you can get your... I mean, if you know what you're doing. I'm not a graphic designer, but a talented graphic designer would know what to do on the iPad. And I feel that it is by far my favorite device this year.
Yeah.
For sure.
So,
you know,
a point to... Sorry, Dhruv. I was going to talk about that whole illustration bit. Yeah, so my wife is an illustrator, so she uses her iPad Pro a lot. I didn't realize until we got the iPad... I think this is the 2018
mm-hmm.
iPad Pro. I didn't understand why it was such a big deal until we got it and she started using it. And then I realized, oh my God, it's just such a fun thing to use, because I doodled really weird shit on it. And well, even though I don't have any talent in that area, it's just fun to use.
Yeah, it is fun to use.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dhruv. Yeah, you're saying something.
Yeah, I mean, all said and done, like, it's looking like a great year for Apple and Apple products, but I mean, in fact, like, yeah, definitely on the product side as well, with the Magic Keyboard now shipping out, that looks like quite an amazing accessory, almost a must-have for a lot of people. But beyond that, like, I'm quite interested to see how this entire scenario plays out in the next year or two, once the ARM-based Mac products start shipping out, because of the synergy between iPads and Mac OS, like, with a lot of the iPad stuff coming to Mac, and a lot of the features from macOS coming to the iPad. How exactly does Apple plan to differentiate, or is it just going to eventually become a unified line of two-in-ones or something like that? You know, the Surface style form factor, maybe, that the iPad essentially just docks in to a keyboard. I don't think that's going to happen in the next 2 years, but I think, I can totally see that happening with a 5-year outlay, so to speak.
Yeah, with the shift to ARM, I think that line between the iPad Pro and the MacBook is definitely going to get blurred, because the iPad is already pretty powerful and they're going to use a similar sort of chipset on the Mac as well, because the first Macs on ARM designs will be aimed at that thin and light segment, right? Because they're not going to roll out a MacBook Pro based on ARM. Now, they'll wait a few years until they got the efficiency and the stability sorted out. So I think it's going to be very exciting to see what rolls out at the end of this year. It's kind of crazy that they just announced the shift and they're able to roll out a product, a customer product at the end of the year, because this is like a significant shift away when it comes to their entire Mac ecosystem. So
yeah.
I'm interested in seeing how that works out, because the demo that they gave of Microsoft Office was very telling, right? Because they know their market. They know that that's what these customers end up doing on it. So, yeah. Interesting that Adobe stuff.
Pretty sure.
In fact, yeah, like you,
yeah.
Know, like you said, Office, Photoshop,
yeah.
Heck, like their entire demo, which they finally revealed that was actually running on an ARM-based machine. That's,
even Tomb Raider, for that matter.
Yeah.
Even Tomb Raider, for that matter.
I mean, it's honestly a wake-up call for everybody else in the industry. Microsoft has been trying to enable this for like half a decade now.
Yeah.
And what the fuck, Microsoft? Like, I mean, it's not as if you don't have the engineering resources. It's not as if you don't have the money to enable this. You have the partner tie-ups. It's just, you know, that the lack of will or the lack of a cohesive push towards enabling this. It's just kind of ridiculous that nobody else has been able to do this the way that Apple is doing it.
Although Harish, like, I think the three of us know quite a few people who just literally talk out of their ass and say that, oh, you know, like, oh, it's going to replace Intel stuff, and then they're like, oh no, it can never beat Intel. You know, there's people on both sides of the camps, and to be honest, it's too soon to say anything right now. And I just want you to let people know that how is it that people who are just judging this new ARM chipset without even using it, and why they have no idea what they're talking about.
See,
like, there are a lot of people on Twitter who's saying that.
Yeah, so here's what I'll tell about what Intel does, right? Intel has not had a good time in the last 3-4 years. Their Skylake, has that whole architecture has been an absolute shit show. They were not able to shift to the 10nm node from 14nm. They're just still iterating on that 14nm node. Things have not worked out for them. That said, they're still the dominant player. AMD has been making huge inroads into that desktop market, but they don't even have like a 20% market share. Intel still owns that segment. Yes, they're lagging behind in the sense that they're not as efficient, particularly when it comes to notebooks. That's one of the key reasons that Apple is actually shifting away, because they were not satisfied with that performance per watt. So if you look at iPhones and iPads, it's all about the performance per watt. The whole A-series thing that Apple does is all about making sure that you get the most amount of performance at the highest level of efficiency. And now they're trying to emulate that same strategy onto the Mac. And this is where things really get interesting, because I think they have the potential to solve it. I would bet on Macs delivering like double the amount of battery life that they give now just by shifting to ARM, because they're just able to control that entire hardware stack much better than anybody else in the industry. And Microsoft was not able to do this because Microsoft is not positioned as a hardware vendor. Sure, they make Surface designs, but that's all they do on the hardware front. For them to invest in their own silicon and have that design built out, that's just not going to be their focus, considering they're shifting into that whole services thing. That's going to be their main focus now. So there's literally nobody else that has that expertise in building out custom silicon, and the fact that Apple is able to scale out that A-series design on a full-fledged MacBook and still deliver that same performance as Intel is fucking incredible. I'm so excited to see what comes out of it. But then again, don't think that this is Intel dying. This Intel will be fine. Intel is not going anywhere. Intel is the only US fab left. Intel is going to be just fine. It's just that it's losing business here.
Yeah. Intel's the dominant CPU company when it comes to gaming, when it comes to desktop PCs, even for Windows laptops.
Yeah.
You need to understand that Apple is, as Dhruv pointed out, or it was Harish, I don't know who it was, it's only 8% of the market. So Apple has done this move for the 8% of those people who are using personal computers.
Yeah.
The other 92%, or maybe let's just say 80%, is dominated by Intel, and Intel is going nowhere. Yes, competition will make them want to innovate more faster and, you know, and get products out there for people that are more efficient. But, you know, I have given shit to Intel to Intel in the past, you know, with AMD's reference. But at the end of the day, I'm still a loyal Intel user, right?
Yeah.
Because they're just reliable. Their chipsets or CPUs last longer than what AMD has on offer. Yeah, they're cheaper, but then you'll also be buying them every 3 years because they just die out quickly. So, you know, we can't really pass judgment so soon right now with the product that's not even out yet.
Yeah.
I mean, from this entire conversation, you know, like the last couple of minutes, there's like, I've had like two takeaways and something that I've thought about as well earlier on. Like, one, with the shift to ARM, you know, I think it kind of signals that Apple doesn't really care that much about the, I wouldn't say enterprise use, but you know, the kind of use where, you know, Mac Pros were dominant. I mean, in the long run, I think this entire switch away, it's like, it's too small a market for them to really care about anymore. And they'd rather just focus on the consumer side of things. I mean, at least that's the feeling that I'm getting. But also, like you said, Harish, right? I mean, Intel's kind of sucked on the laptop side lately. And
yeah.
I hope this is an awakening for them as well, because the general consumer trend is, leave aside gamers, okay, that's a different audience altogether. The general consumer trend, though, is to switch away from desktops to laptops. The average guy who wants to buy a new computer is probably not looking at a desktop. He's looking at a laptop, something, you know, that's thin, light, portable, reasonable performance. And that's where they need to double down. I mean, Intel's been focusing on that all-day connectivity aspect forever, but that shit doesn't work right now. It should be working after all these years of marketing it. 10 hours of battery life is still a pipe dream, because no matter, like, every laptop promises that, no laptop delivers that. You know, these are the key, like, connectivity, battery life, reliable, reasonable performance. These are the features that Intel needs to focus on, and they've been talking about it, but I hope it's a wake-up call for them and they actually start delivering on all of that.
Actually, you make a good point there, because Qualcomm has made a decent amount of inroads into that market on Windows with the always-on stuff. I think one of the Surfaces that launched this year is powered by the 8X series.
I think it's a Surface X.
Yeah, one of those. So they've understood, Intel has understood that is the market that they need to focus on. And I don't know if you guys saw this, but they're doing this Lakefield platform that's basically going up against Qualcomm. So they are promising 10 to 13 hours of battery life, a much more energy efficient design that still delivers a decent amount of performance for like day-to-day use. So they are making some headway into that, but I don't understand why they didn't do that 5 years ago. Again, these guys are the dominant player in the industry. They are the ones that should push the industry forward into new categories, not be the ones to roll out products after everyone else has.
I think it was just because of lack of competition. They were just very comfortable where they were. It's not that they couldn't do it. It's just that they were very comfortable at being at top, and then they all of a sudden got heat from AMD and now Apple as well, Qualcomm as well. So now they'll be forced to work, you know, on their chipset, at least for the laptop segment.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, Intel being Intel, having a great history of CPUs, they will bounce back for sure. I have good faith in them.
Oh, of course. That's not a question. It's very exciting time in the silicon industry, man.
Yeah.
Both on the mobile, I don't know why I said mobile.
I love competition, man. This is when everyone benefits.
Yeah,
I
know. And even here, I think for 2 years or so, MacBook Pros will still be powered by x86. They're not going to shift out that drastically. But 2 years down the line, when you see that first ARM-based MacBook Pro, oh my God, I want to see what that thing is able to do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they've had a lot of issues with thermal throttling lately. So hopefully this is going to help. I mean, those i9 MacBook Pros, they can't really sustain that kind of performance because
Let me give you that example. I am using an i9 MacBook Pro, and just yesterday I felt like my skin is going to burn off, which is why I switched to the iPad in the first place. it was so, and I'm not even charging a damn thing. I'm just using Pages, which is Apple's Word version, to write a freaking story. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
Yep.
Yeah.
Why is that I'm going to lose my testicles soon? What's happening? You know, like.
Oh my God.
See, but that's the thing.
Yeah,
but you know what? It's
a laptop, man.
I've got a very well configured MacBook Pro. It's a 2-year-old model. But I mean, for the last 10 days or 15 days, I found myself using the damn Xiaomi Mi Notebook 14 more than that, because of those the issues that I have with that Mac. It should not be so laggy. It should not be slowing down so much. You know, basic things when I do, you know, things should not be just jerking around. Like, there are times when it works absolutely fine, and I love the entire experience of using a Mac, but I mean, if a 50,000 rupee laptop can make me, you know, like the reliability that I'm getting with this right now, clearly something going wrong. And I mean, I saw Linus Tech Tips video last night, and he makes a really good point. I mean, it would be kind of obvious to us, but maybe it's just something that we didn't think about. Intel obviously has a lot of insight. Apple obviously has a lot of insights into Intel's roadmap for the next couple of years. And
they're not impressed.
And a chipset transition doesn't come overnight.
No.
So clearly they are not confident in what is coming up in the next few years, you know, which is why this entire transition, it does not come easy. It does not come cheap. So for Apple to begin development on this a couple of years ago and enable this, sure, there's the vertical integration aspect for absolutely.
Yeah.
But it requires a bigger push than that to make this transition. And we saw this earlier on with PowerPC to Intel as well. This was, 2005 or so?
Yeah.
Exactly, you know. And Steve Jobs, he went up on stage and he said it very clearly that, you know, we know what PowerPC is working on, and realistically, they cannot deliver the kind of performance that we want in the next couple of years. And so we have to make the transition. And that's also quite telling.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the closest thing to an ARM laptop right now is actually the iPad Pro. I think that if you want a glimpse, it won't be the entire deal, of course, but if you want a glimpse into how those laptops would work, I think the iPad Pro 2018 and even 2020 is a great indicator of that.
Actually, this isn't the first time they're working with ARM on this. They already have the T1 and T2 chips that they use in the iMac and iMac
mm-hmm.
Pros. So those they've been using for like 2-3 years now to handle the camera and audio and a lot of the auxiliary stuff along with the security, secure enclave, right? So they know how ARM works in that environment. It's not like they're doing something brand new here. But I think the most illuminating thing I've read about this whole thing is Intel's former chief engineer talking about it.
He just left, right?
No, he left.
He just left, right?
No, he left 2 years ago. Francois,
okay.
He's a French
okay.
guy.
Yeah, but
he's brilliant. Like, this is the guy that built Intel's designs for the last decade and a half or so. So yeah, he talked to, I think, PC Gamer, and he talked about how Apple was like the most vocal critic of the Skylake platform because they've just had so many performance issues integrating that with macOS. So I think that they've been looking for a shift for several years now. And I think this was just the last straw.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers up all the essentials of WWDC, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does. Alright, so let's switch to something else then. Let's talk some more products. Ooh, I got the Dyson PureCool and the V11 vacuums, and I've been liking them a lot. But first, let's see what Dhruv says. So Dhruv, you've got both, right?
I love them. I mean, I absolutely love these products. So the thing about me is that, you know, I give a glowing recommendation only if I'm truly convinced by it. And the other bit is that I like products that are designed to do one job. For example, one of my favorite products is the Kindle, because it does one job and it does really well. And that's the thing with these Dyson products as well. It's not like a smart vacuum cleaner with Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and all that shit built into it. I don't want that. I don't need that, okay? it does one job and it does it so well. I love the V11. I've been using it for the last 2-3 weeks now. And it's just, I mean, honestly, it's one of those products that has actually made my life a lot easier. So there's that. And I mean, the PureCool air purifier, that came as a surprise. Like, I was supposed to get the V11 to check out, and I sent over the air purifier first. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just, it's a nice piece of kit, you know. I did not think that I would enjoy using an air purifier as much as I thought I would, which is a very weird thing to say. But hey, that cooling fan, it's actually quite convenient to have in the Delhi heat. Like, I've got it running right now. So for the listeners, like, we usually end up switching off all our ACs and fans because they make too much noise while recording. But this thing is like nearly silent, and you know,
I can't even hear it. I didn't even know it was on.
Yeah,
yeah, I
really
found mine running 5 feet away from me, and
I got it like a foot away. I got it like a foot away, and you can't hear it. And I don't think I'll ever, you know, get over the fact that there's a fan without blades, and I can just like stick my hand into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I mean
the stuff you want to do as a kid, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, see, that's the thing. They're expensive, sure, but you're getting a really nice design, and you get a product that works. Like, what more can you ask? You know, this thing is going to last you a really, really long time, and that's what you want from a good high-end product.
Yeah. I didn't understand why there was such a big deal about Dyson vacuums until I got the V11 Pro. Oh my god, I fully understand all the praise that it gets all the time. My wife doesn't usually give a shit about 90% of the products we get into the house, but then she's like, oh shit, this thing is actually convenient. So we have the, so for some context, we use the Xiaomi robot vacuum all the time, but this is just more convenient to just clean desks or other surfaces or anything else in general. I mean, I didn't know that they give this out with like 20 million attachments. I've just been plugging things in and
I told you, remember?
What works with what.
Remember I mentioned once you figure out what the attachment does, then you know you have a great time. But you have to do that initial research.
Yeah, talking about attachments, like, I didn't know that there was this lint roller kind of brush thing in the box, but that works really well. But you should check out the brushes, like the plastic brush attachment.
Yeah.
That thing is insane. Like, you run it on a carpet, and I did not know how much dust there was in there.
I used something with the soft bristles to clean my beard. That was fun.
Okay,
wow.
Then yeah. Well,
so
I almost I turned the Dyson around. And because it looks like a cosplay weapon, I was just going all like pew pew on it, and I almost sucked half my hair in it. So that was fun.
I mean, I haven't used the air purifier like you guys have, so I've never used it. So I have no idea what it's all about. But yeah, it's good to hear that it's a nice thing to have at home, especially during summers. But remember when I said initially when we talked about the V11 that what else this shit can do? I found a new thing that this shit can do. recently, 2 weeks ago, my wife cut my hair. And, we did have newspapers on the floor to, you know, make sure it doesn't go, you know, the cut hair doesn't go all over the place. There was still some that, you know, was left over on the floor. And, I mean, I suddenly had an idea. Let's use the, fucking V11 for this shit. You never know. It may be able to... clean up all the hair that's on the floor, and you know what, it did it in like 10 seconds. Everything it just sucked in everything, all the hair. I mean, I'm not afraid to get haircuts at home anymore, let's just say that.
Oh, talking about a cool feature, man, this sounds like a Dyson plug, but whatever. Just for the kick of it, I tried out the heating mode on the air purifier thing.
Now you're making me jealous.
I have no idea how it is doing that. I mean, I honestly don't. Maybe there is that kind of tech, but it's not a blower in with the heating induction coils, which just sucks the
hot air.
No, the hair. Yeah, I mean, which just makes it unbearable to be in the same room. And it's a plastic chassis, so the body doesn't heat up. I don't know how it's doing that, but I mean, I'm looking forward to using this in the winters because, I mean, I like the room nice and cozy, and yeah, this thing looks like a pretty damn cool solution. And it's an air purifier to boot.
There are coals in the embedded in the chassis, and it gets ignited every time you turn on the heating mode.
Well, maybe I can bake a pizza in there.
All right. So yeah, that's. I think yeah. I never really understood the point of a vacuum that costs 50,000, but yeah, I understand it now. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It's just the convenience and the versatility of it. You can just use it, and it works fine. I mean, the battery thing on medium runs like 40-50 minutes. That was more than enough to clean the house.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the only issue that I had with my V10, which would keep running out of charge. But the cool thing that I've noticed with the V11 is that they've improved the motor, and generally I think the battery is better. But even if it isn't, at the same setting, just because it's a more powerful motor, it's just a little more efficient. So this time around, I've not faced any battery issues, and the medium setting is actually more than enough.
Yeah. Cool. So if you want a good vacuum, get the Dyson. If you want a good air purifier, get the Dyson. All right.
But
so,
also, like, if you want a cheap air purifier, I think the V stuff is still pretty damn good. If you want an affordable option.
It is.
Just throwing
it out astonished
there.
How well the Dyson actually cleaned the room, considering the air purification part is like tiny. I have a massive Philips that's like 10 kilos or something, and this did as good a job while weighing a third.
Because the purification, like the air purifier module, is actually pretty compact, and I switched off my other air purifier once this got in, and I also got an external monitor, and it's actually done just as well.
Yeah,
I guess expensive engineering does a good job.
Yeah, engineers make products.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's end the show today at the one hour mark because I actually have
something to talk about. I think we have 2 minutes left.
Sure, go on, man.
So Sony launched their first TWS in India. Did you hear about that?
Oh shit, I did. You have it.
Yeah, it's right here.
Nice.
So I reviewed the WF XB700.
Right.
It's the first TWS in India. I'm just going to briefly tell you if it's worth it or not. It's for 9999. It's actually the extra waistline, which I'm not a big fan of.
Mm-hmm.
But for people who like to listen to Bollywood or Punjabi music, it's a great earphones. I personally just turned down the lower frequencies because since the lower frequencies are boosted, the earphones also boost the other frequencies, and I'm not a big fan of that. I just basically use an equalizer to fix that. But overall, man, it's a great start for Sony with their new TWS line, and I just hope they come out with the WF XM3 soon. I really love those. The one that we saw in Taiwan, if you remember.
How's the battery life on these?
It's around, it's 4.5 hours on a single charge for the buds, and I think it's around 16-17 hours with the charging case.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Not too bad.
That's not bad.
Wow.
The only issue that I have with them, they're a little bulky, and at night when I'm like trying to go to bed, I use earbuds to watch stuff, and it just hurts my ear. Like it's just very bulky.
Would you rate it
like the
better or worse than the Galaxy Buds? I think those are in the same price range.
Yeah.
No, I would still go for Galaxy Buds.
Yeah.
And do these have sweat resistance?
Yeah, they do. It has sweat resistance for sure. So that makes a big difference here if you like to work out and need some good music. I mean, I think the Sony one is more for music enthusiasts, and Buds are for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I would say the Sony ones are, quite a decent attempt at the TWS segment in India.
Cool.
Interesting.
Sounds good.
Actually, we should start doing this more. We should talk about the products that we've just reviewed or the stuff that we're reviewing for the coming week. So, Dhruv, why don't you start? What are you working on?
I mean, I haven't written about it yet, but I am trying out the Realme Earbuds Q. It's an interesting product. I mean, clearly they're going right after the Redmi Earbuds S. God, the similarities in the name will always get me. But yeah, not a bad product, especially after my scathing piece on Realme's ecosystem.
Oh yeah. I would not call that scathing. I would call that
takedown.
A lot more than that. Yeah, yeah. That's like
the intention was not.
I'm coming. I'm coming for you.
The intention was not to shit on them, but yeah. I mean, my experience with all their ecosystem products so far has been pretty shitty, to say the least. Sorry, Realme. But the Q is actually pretty decent so far. I can't say that I'm like in love with the sound signature. It's okay. It's actually like, if you wanted something a little bass heavy, the Redmi Buds do it better. But the design is nice. It's compact. The case, I mean, at least aesthetically, it's a very nice looking product. Not entirely sure about the quality of the plastics. For example, the lid, and this was the case with the Redmi earbuds as well. The lid on the case is where, you know, you can see that the plastic is not as thick as it should be. But that's very noticeable on the Realme Buds. And I think the same extends to the earbuds as well. In the sense that, I mean, it is all plastic, of course. It looks nice, but the quality is certainly not premium, for sure. The moment you touch it, you can notice that. But the fit is great. I mean, I've actually been sleeping with these on. So I listen to drone and ambient music while sleeping, because there's no way I can put myself to sleep other than that. And I have chronic insomnia. But these haven't fallen out. Like, I mean, they're usually in place even when I wake up, which is incredible. The only other earbuds which have managed that have been the Braggy Dash, and those were tiny. So that's definitely a plus. The sound quality, you can tweak it with the app, but at least out of the box, I am not like, I mean, I'm okay about it. Like, it's not as if, you know, I'm like gushing about the sound quality. It's fine. 4.5 hours of battery life, realistically 4 hours, which is what you can expect in this price range. And it's $2,000. I think it's a reasonable competitor to the Redmi earbuds. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's a standout winner, but it's a reasonable option if you want something with a bit of focus on design. If all you want is audio quality, then the Oppo Enco M31, I think that's proving to be a very reliable option for $2,000. But that's not a true wireless earphone, so you know, that's a different category altogether.
Yeah. So you're working on anything else or just the Realme?
Actually, there you go. Like, I think I just spat out my entire review.
Hold on, I'll transcribe it.
No, man, like, this week's all been about features, and so far, the next week also looks like it's going to be a feature-full week. I think I just needed a bit of break from products anyway, so... The Realme stuff, the new phones, have already been covered by the international team, so I don't have to write about that.
So lucky.
Yes. I mean, I can't say I'm complaining about that.
Actually, you know what? Let's talk about your story that you did, the feature that you did this week. Brief second. There's a reason why I retweeted that, because I feel the same way. Just with these buds as well, I feel that these buds are also rushed without considering what the competition is. I've been using them as well, and I felt meh. I don't know what to say, because I didn't have any feelings for the earbuds. Right, that just shows that just because you want to do a launch event, launch base, accessories, whatever, copy Huawei's strategy, doesn't mean you have great products. And I think
you know, if I had to put it in a gist, like, I'll just contextualize that entire piece for our listeners, and I would recommend that you go and give it a read. Like, I shouldn't be tooting my own horn, but sure. I
did it first. Fuck that. I mean, it was a great piece.
I'll drop in a link as well, maybe. Two things. The Redmi Buds for that price range interested and excited me enough that I went out and bought another pair. These would not.
Yeah.
And that's the entire problem for Realme. You cannot rush an ecosystem. Products take time to develop. Products take time to finesse. And you need that. There's a reason why... I mean, Apple is the biggest example, but if you want to go into the value side of things, there's a reason why Xiaomi's ecosystem is doing well in India as well, despite the smaller number of options. And yeah, I mean, in China, it's massive, and it's picking up in other countries as well. And there's a reason behind that. You know, there's a lot of thought behind the products. They're partnering with the right companies. Not everything is in-house. They've invested in over 300 companies. And they're partnering with the right sources to build a cohesive vision, which again ties in with what we said about Apple earlier. There has to be a vision behind what you're doing. It cannot be a slapdash effort just for the sake of, you know, entering a market. It might work out with the first product, but it's, I mean, a Realme's target demographic is what, 18 to 25 year olds, kids who are looking for value. And these people are online, you know. They're talking about the products, they're sharing about their experiences. One bad experience, or maybe just the second one, they will just swear off the product. They will never come back to it. And that is a bigger problem for the brand. With the ecosystem, you're trying to build brand loyalty over selling one-off products. And loyalty can only be built on quality, not by, you know, trying to rush an ecosystem.
That exactly what happened with me. I'll give a very quick example. The Redmi Air Buds, whatever the hell they were called, the one that looked like AirPods. They didn't launch. They launched quite recently. My earbuds used to run out in half an hour, and today I can't even charge the damn thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's that bad.
So I think the point about quality
is
the key one there, because Xiaomi has a stringent set of guidelines for all of its ecosystem partners. And so they cannot just launch a product under the ecosystem label if they don't meet that guidelines and if it doesn't go through this extensive testing. So I think there needs to be a similar level of quality control here, because for all that Xiaomi does, it has like 1,000 products in the ecosystem label and all of them are consistently good. So it got there by setting up a whole set of guidelines at the beginning. So I think that was what was missing here. Anyway, let's see how...
Yeah, and if you want to hear more about that, we actually talked to Anuj Sharma from Xiaomi, the marketing head at Xiaomi, over at on the last episode. And there's a nice long segment over there on the guidelines that the company follows when establishing an ecosystem. So that's a great listen, and you guys should definitely go and check that out again.
Yep. So... Akshay, are you working on anything else?
I actually previewed Dirt 5. That's an upcoming game which is set to launch in 3-4 months. I got an exclusive hands-on at the game, along with a few international writers as well. I think I was the only one in India. That looks like an incredible racing game. I'm also working on the Microsoft Surface X.
Oh, nice.
Alongside the Mi laptop, just to get a little bit of reference and see how Windows is doing this year, apart from that, the Realme stuff, and then basically everything that you guys are doing, so stuff that we can't talk about right now.
Akshay flexing.
Yeah.
We haven't done an Akshay flex in a while.
Yeah.
Akshay flex. There's another game that's coming which I can't talk about yet, but yeah, I think we'll be excited. I haven't gone to it yet.
Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Soon.
Like, I think we should just nickname you what was that called? The Flex Pie.
The Flex Pie. Yeah. Oh my god. All right, so I have a lot of things to review. I didn't finish the Mi Notebook 14 review yet because I wanted to use it.
Oh, that too. I forgot to
mention. Yeah, I wanted to use it for 2 weeks and I haven't reviewed a notebook in 3 years. So I wanted to just get those, figure out how to test it and run it through a few tests to see how it works. That sort of thing. So anyway, Excited to finally put those words into a more cohesive post next week. I also have been using this Amazfit Power Buds. So these are really nice earbuds that have built-in heart rate monitoring. And I wasn't sure how it would work, but it's actually pretty solid. I didn't think that earbuds could do a decent job at it, but they do. I think they're in the US for now, I think around $100, and they're a pretty decent option for workout earbuds.
Sweet. I've got them lying around somewhere. I mean, I got the package the other day and I still haven't opened it.
Yeah, they're a solid option. So that's a decent one. I don't know when they'll bring it to India.
They are. I think they just launched. Or
the
they
Power
are
Buds?
Launching it soon. Yeah.
They are launching, yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay, well, my review is going live on Monday, so yay.
Fuck's sake. I'll have to check my embargo.
And what else?
Basically, there's a lot of gaming gear. I think you also have something, and I also have something.
Oh, yeah, I do. We'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, we can't talk about it, right? Even though yours is completely different from mine, but yeah. It's stuff that
and I got the Poco F2 Pro review that's going to be done next week. It's actually a really nice phone. It's one of the first phones I've used this year that has that retractable camera. So it's like an all-screen design. I'm so glad that somebody decided to make it. So yeah,
next week we should rant about pop-up cameras. I love those. I hope that design never goes away and that there's always at least one option or the other.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll bring this to India, but they really should.
I mean, honestly, for me, I think OnePlus design peaked with the 7T Pro.
Yeah.
I just love that all-screen display. You know, I don't want a camera cutout or anything like that. But you know what? I'll save the rant for later.
Yeah, we'll talk about it when Nord comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we did a decent job. How long are we running now? Okay, 71 minutes.
No, we didn't do a decent job. We are over by 12 minutes.
Hey, better than before, okay? I remember last week we were going to run it in 45 minutes and it was nearly 2 hours.
Yeah, 1 hour 40 minutes of recording time and another half hour of conversations.
Anyway, alright. I think that's it. Unless you guys want to talk about anything else.
Akshay, any recommendations for this week? Fun stuff?
Oh yeah, I'm making a work from home playlist on Spotify. Check it out later on this, maybe today or tomorrow.
Awesome. We're going to tweet that out, Harish.
All right. I'm just seeing A League of Their Own. It's a British game show. It's hilarious. So if you like football, they have a lot of celebrity guest footballers usually, and tennis players and things like that that come on the show, and it's just a whole lot of fun. So if you're looking for something light, take a look.
Yeah, I'm going to watch 2.5 Men right now. Yeah. Men.
I was about to join in on the crooning bit, but maybe I shouldn't.
So catchy, right?
Yeah.
So catchy.
All right, Drew. Yeah. Albums.
Standout album of the week, Krungbin Mortigai. Beautiful album. If you like guitar work, Mark Spear is amazing. Also, Grade A's, Chester Bennington's first band, they remastered and redid the album. It's called Amends. Do not listen to that. I mean, it's fine, but the music was special. I would highly recommend. So they've got two albums called Awake Me, which came out in 1994, and No Sun Today, which came out in 1997. They're not on Spotify, but they are on YouTube. Go check that out if you're missing Chester. Beautiful music, a bit grungy, not like Linkin Park at all, but it's got his trademark vocals from when he was 16 or 17, which is insane. And hey, Chester Bennington had dreadlocks at a point.
What?
Yes, he did.
Imagine Harish having dreadlocks, man. That would be fun.
I'm so glad I got to see them live in the US. I don't know, 2014 or something around that. Yeah, he did a fantastic job.
I cried the day Chester died, and I mean, yeah, that sure, we everybody shits on Linkin Park, but that music meant something.
Oh no, I love their music.
Yeah.
That remix album is by far my
favorite.
Holy
shit,
album
Reanimation
of all time.
Was
Reanimation. It is my favorite album of all time. That album pushed boundaries. Back.
Yep, absolutely. I can
way before anyone else thought of
true
it.
That.
I mean, they're okay not playing it safe, and that's what I like about them.
Even the Jay-Z Encore
Collision
Course. Oh my god, that was incredible. Both Linkin Park and Jay-Z, I mean, they pushed genres to a new level. And come on, man.
I mean,
seriously,
who would have thought,
that.
Like, Jay-Z and Linkin Park, but they made it work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's so good. It's so good.
So good.
Yes. But other than that, got talked into watching a very, very cheesy show, I guess. So I saw a couple of episodes and I kind of liked it. Gossip Girl.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. But anyways, I'm not watching much of TV these days anyway. So, and I'm kind of glad for that work. And I think I get enough screen time already.
Yeah.
And that's it for me.
All right.
I think that's that. And we're coming in at just over 75 minutes. Awesome. All right. So thank you for listening to the 19th episode of the Untitled Gadget Podcast. We will be back next week with the OnePlus TV and a whole lot of other good stuff. So make sure you listen and subscribe and do all the other things that Dhruv asks you to do weekly. Yeah, with that, we're out. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Cheers. I'm going to end it with this. I got 99 problems and a OnePlus ain't one.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Chica, what?
That's nice.
Cool. Bye, guys.
Bye.
And recording cut.